Welcome to Living in Hi-Fi. I'm Steve.
And I'm Flissy. This is the podcast about records. Today's album is Star Wars and Other Galactic Funk by Mecco on Millennium Records from 1977, catalog number MNLP8001.
So this album is from our December trip to the Baltimore Record Bazaar. And following our purchase of this album, we posted it on our Instagram account, and we found out that a number of our listeners remembered this album and wanted us to feature it, so we decided to put it on our podcast today.
And for the record, the number is 2. That's all it it actually only takes one person to suggest a record, and if we have it or if we can find it, we will gladly talk about anything that you recommend to us.
All right, Flissy Zoo, do you want to tell us a little bit about what this album looks like?
This album is pretty awesome. It has these two people in spacesuits. It's got a guy in a blue kind of jetpack suit and a lady who has sort of like Leia buns inside of her like space helmet leaning forward. So her butt is kind of like pushing into the spaceman's hip. There's like some torpedoes. There's sort of like deco-ish, futuristic space situation platform that they're standing on in front of a sun and some, you know, space with stars back there. And the Star Wars and Other Galactic Funk by Mecco is in this sort of, like, blocky 70s typeface. And then on the back, it's got, like, some planet with rings. It's got, like, the night sky as the background. And it, like, is very literally, side one is Star Wars and Other Galactic Funk. It's got a track listing of the Star Wars songs on it. And then on the side two is literally Other Galactic Funk. That is the track on side two. It's got a list of all the musicians on the back as well.
So I find this album interesting. I guess today is going to be a little different because normally we pick two songs from the album, but side one is really just a medley of Star Wars tunes, and then, as Flissy said, side B is just Other Galactic Funk. So it's really only two tracks. So today, I guess we're just sort of talking about the entire album in general. And I find it interesting because in very small letters on the front cover above Star Wars and Other Galactic Funk, it says music inspired by, but I would say it's pretty literally music from Star Wars.
Yeah.
But I don't know, maybe they need to do that to avoid lawsuits.
Maybe, but I think that he had George Lucas's blessing on this album. We can talk about this later.
All right, well, let's get to our first clip, which is really the entirety of Side A. So let's listen to Star Wars and Other Galactic Funk.
Thank you.
So what do you think about this track?
All right. Well, right off the bat, you get like these laser beam sounds.
So awesome.
Maybe you're supposed to be blasters or something. But anyway, it tells you that it's going to be awesome because you've got this disco beat underneath of it. And then shortly thereafter, you got these like R2-D2 sounds and some lightsabers. And I think it's really actually very well done because it's definitely recognizable as the music from Star Wars, but it's got like a nice disco sound to it. And Mecco does a very good job, I think, blending between the different themes that he decides to feature on this album.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the songs on this side one are not necessarily in the order that they appear in the movie. So he definitely made some interesting choices in how to mix the songs together that has like, you know, its own sort of unique musical narrative that's separate from the story of the movie. But it's like, if you listen through all of side one, it's got this really awesome flow to it. And yes, awesome laser beams. It's got pretty authentic R2-D2 sounds, which they had to create in studio on a synthesizer. Like, they didn't have access to the actual R2-D2 sounds, so they had to listen. You know, they went, Mecco went to the movie a whole bunch of times when it first went out, and so he just listened to the R2-D2 sound and then created it on his own.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think so too.
So what can you tell us about Mecco, Flissy?
So Dominic Mecco Minardo was born November 29th, 1939 in Johnsonburg, Pennsylvania. And his father played a valve trombone in a little local Italian band. And so he was the one that convinced Mecco to play trombone at age 9, although Mecco chose to play the slide trombone rather than the valve trombone. And the Star Wars theme Cantina Band song reached number 1 on the Billboard Hot 100 on October 1st, 1977, holding to that position for 2 weeks.
Pretty awesome song.
It really is.
One of the best songs in the movie in the first place, I guess.
Yeah, obviously.
Your favorite scene.
Cantina Band is definitely my jam. Mecco, he went to music conservatory and played in the army band at West Point. And then when he got out of the army, he worked as a session musician. He got into pop music after hearing Petula Clark's Downtown. And then started arranging horn sections for other artists. So, even though he was a session musician, his interest was really still more in, jazz and orchestral music. He wasn't super into pop, but for some reason, this arrangement of Petula Clark's Downtown, he was super into that, and he saw the potential of pop music. And aside from this Star Wars album that he put out, he's also pretty well known for the trombone solo in I'm Coming Out by Diana Ross. And he founded the Disco Corporation of America in 1973. And as a producer within the Disco Corporation of America, he produced Never Can Say Goodbye by Gloria Gaynor and a whole bunch of other artists until 1976. So the story with this Star Wars album, he saw the Star Wars, what's the episode 4 called now?
A New Hope.
What?
A New Hope, but it's just called Star Wars.
It's just called Star Wars. Okay, well then that's why I'm
confused. It was retroactively called A New Hope.
I see that. Okay. Man, I feel like I'm going to get some Star Wars fans I can just hear them on the other side of the internet being it's a new hope, it's a new hope. Anyway, so he saw the original release of Star Wars on opening day, and he loved it so much that he watched it 4 times over the weekend. Probably not the only one on the planet to have done that. And he had the idea for a disco version of the soundtrack. He pitched it to his label and then hired a bunch of his friends to help, a bunch of musicians and producers that he worked with through the Disco Corporation of America, and then recorded this whole album in 3 weeks. And he's got he definitely found a thing through this disco and reinterpretations of movie soundtracks. There was also a disco version of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, The Wizard of Oz, Superman, and Star Trek.
So the thing I find interesting about this album, on the back side of it here, it's got credits of all the musicians.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the musicians it has listed as musicians from the Milky Way galaxy, which, okay, I guess that makes sense. But then he also has this like second column that says musicians from the Koromar galaxy, from the planet Fuya, by special decree of the Nomal Tribunal. And then it's got some, I don't know, kind of alien instruments, I guess, and alien names.
Yeah.
And then from the planet Sarutu, and then some more, the Quibbly Twins. Do you have any idea what that's about?
I don't have any idea. No.
Very bizarre.
No idea.
And then it says, like at the bottom here, it says the logistics of transporting all the musicians from their home planets, the translating computers, the laser energizers, and the Photron system, courtesy of Telecon. Very, very strange.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. But I think, like, my understanding about Mecco Minardo is he's like, I think that he was really into disco because at the time it was like such a new thing. I think he was really like inspired by the artistic potential of disco, and I think having read some interviews with him, it seems like he was a little disappointed that like disco did not go further than it did. Like, you know, once that disco rhythm sort of became a thing, like nobody ever took it further than that. And I think maybe what we're seeing by like this list of, from the planets, Sarutu playing the Blorkas, like I think maybe that's a little bit of the aspiration of disco creativity that Mecco Minardo was hoping for. So he ended up retiring from music in 1985 and became a commodity broker. He's like, this disco thing, it just isn't panning out, so I'm just gonna go into real estate. You might also notice on the back of the album there is listed as a remix engineer is Tony Bongiovi, and this is rock star John Bon Jovi's cousin. And another album that we are on the lookout for, my brother recommended the Star Wars Christmas album, which, having researched this album, I now know that the Star Wars Christmas album is also produced by Mecco, and John Bon Jovi is featured as a child on the Star Wars Christmas album.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know. So random, right?
All right. Well, let's get to our second clip. This is Other Galactic Funk. This is side two. We'll be right back. Okay, Felicity, what do you think about this?
It's, you know, I feel like the title of this track is very, it's just so appropriate. Like, I feel like the Star Wars is side is, like, so epic. I mean, like, that soundtrack on its own is just already epic. It's probably among the greatest movie soundtracks ever, right? And so it's got this disco treatment with the laser beams. It's so awesome. And then side two is maybe a little bit of an afterthought. It's like, oh yeah, and other galactic funk. There's not quite as much laser beams. It's still kind of funky, but it's like not as epic, I guess, as side A.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's even a stretch to call it other galactic funk, though. It sounds quite terrestrial to me in that it sounds like some marching band music.
It does.
And I just think, you know, I even though I played the oboe when I was in high school, I was in marching band. And so, you know, oboe is not really a marching instrument. So I played percussion while I was in marching band. And this sounds like the kind of thing to me that, you know, you would have like the drum section playing like while the rest of the band was sort of like resting between songs or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. It sounds like, yeah, definitely something you could hear in some parade now.
Yeah, and I think it sounds like, if you've ever been to Disney World, it sounds like the cue music for the Buzz Lightyear ride, which does also have, like, the marching band thing because, you know, you're going off into your little cart to, like, I never saw Toy Story, actually, so I don't know, like, that the bad guy, you're shooting him with the lasers, and so and it is, like, this marching music, like, you're in this little, like, galactic army, and so it also has this, like, very, like, clipped-off kind of snare drum thing, and this, like, vague whistling in that cue, and I, like, for some reason, it sounds so much like this. I wonder if the whoever did the like sound design for the Buzz Lightyear ride had heard this album. Probably. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. So what did you think of this album overall, Felicity? What did you like about it? What didn't you like?
I mean, it's just, it's awesome. Like, the cover is awesome. I remember when I bought it, Mikey, who, it was his booth that I bought it from, he was also trying to pawn off some other, like, Star Wars disco-themed albums. I'm like, no, I think one is good. And so, I think this does satisfy the need of some fusion of space and disco.
What don't you like about it, though?
I don't know. The other galactic funk, I think, is, it's not bad, but it's not like, it's not quite as epic as side one.
Yeah, I guess I would agree. I mean, the highlight of this is side one, and the low side is maybe side two. I don't know. I mean, you know, I might pull out this album to listen to side one, and then while I'm listening to it, I'd probably continue on to side two, but I don't think I would ever pull it out to listen to side two.
Yeah.
And I think that, I don't know, I mean, this doesn't really get to this album here or there, but I think it gets to how things are packaged for LP versus CD or digital.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, there's like a natural break in LPs between the two sides. You know, you have to physically flip it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so on the LP version of this, it's like all of the tracks on side one are all the songs, you know, it's like they're different tracks on the LP, even though they're all sort of like, it's all one piece, you know, piece of music or whatever. And I think that's interesting because it seems like in the digital translations of it, you basically get the entirety of the thing as just one track.
Hmm.
And I know that in the early days of CD, or I guess the CD specification has this ability for like tracks and indexes. So mm-hmm. within a track, you can have different, you know, different times or whatever that you can skip to or whatever. And I don't know. I mean, that's something I think that CDs have never done a good job with. I mean, we also saw that with when we were doing our Ray Conniff Christmas album, that on the LP itself, each of the songs were different tracks, but when it was put into CD version, it was just sort of like a handful of medleys.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, that always kind of bothered me about CDs, that they never really sort of broke up these pieces into, you know, individual things.
Yeah.
I think some of that is coming back now with some of the, you know, digital presentations of things. I know one of the programs that I listen to music through is this program called Rune, and it has the ability to sort of have, you know, a work and then have, you know, different movements or whatever within that, maybe coming from the classical music sort of support. But I think that's something that I would like to see more of. And, yeah, I don't know, because you always have your favorite parts. I mean, I want to go listen to the Cantina Band. And
don't we all?
You know, it's harder to fast forward around through it, finding it, rather than just being able to, you know, go to track 7 or whatever. Yeah,
just pick up the needle and back it up again.
Exactly. All right. Well, overall, I would say, I don't know, an album worth owning, kind of a novelty, but...
Yeah, especially if you're a Star Wars fan, I think it would be a cool addition. I'm now interested to seek out the Star Trek one.
Yeah, indeed. So, for more information, you can visit our show notes at livinginhifi.com/episode/41. As always, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at livinginhifi. For a longer correspondence, you can email us at feedback@livinginhifi.com. And next week, we have one of my favorite albums and one of the earliest acquisitions that I have, actually something we've talked about in a previous episode, so stay tuned for that, and thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.